Arm's Length Reporting for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome to WKEO Politics. We're going to spend the first half of the show. We're going to talk primarily about domestic issues. We're going to talk about economics. Economics being obviously centering around inflation. Jimmy's got some rather interesting numbers that I want to talk about almost immediately on that. And we're going to then, in the second half, we're going to talk about what's going on in the country with Dr. John Huber, PhD clinical psychologist, who has his thumb exactly on what's going on in terms of the, depression and anger in our country. Depression and anger really are pretty much the same emotion, which I find to be very, very sad that that's going on in America, the greatest country in the world. Jim, the question I have is, we were the greatest country in the world. I'm not saying that we are not right now, but I'm saying we have an awful lot of catching up that we have to do. Let's start out talking about the economic situation in the United States. The official numbers right now in terms of inflation are admittedly a record high, around 11.1% for the last, it's been for the last 4 decades, but you're saying those numbers really are skewed negatively and that the numbers are really actually around 17%. Can you elaborate on that, please?
Sure. So the producer price index numbers came out yesterday on Thursday. We're recording this on Friday. And those numbers showed 11.1% for the cost of production and the cost for raw materials, the things that actually create our products that we buy. The day before that came out with Bureau of Labor and Statistics came out with the number of 9.1% year over year for inflation, with a 1.3% monthly inflation rate. Now, these are, since I think November, roughly 1981. So as you say, 4 decades since then, and the end of the Carter administration and kind of the ramifications of the policies that they had. But the real problem is, after that period of time, the government, the executive branch, and the different agencies changed the way they calculate the consumer price, or moved to a CPI, consumer price index. If you take away the way they looked at it, go back to pre-1981, 1982 numbers, the inflation rate would be significantly higher. Some recommend or say as much as 17%, maybe the highest we've ever recorded. And that's distinct possibility if you use the same statistics that they're judging the 40-year high on. So that's something that people need to be aware of. And of course, with the 9.1% year-over-year consumer price increases, the producer price increase showing 11.1% means that we have not stalled the inflation train, that the Fed and whatever's happening has not been enough to slow it. And of course, with the, you know, we do have a slight decrease, a small percentage for fuel, which dropping 30 to 40 cents a gallon over the last month, which is some relief to a certain extent. But the reality is, those previous costs from May, June increases haven't even taken effect yet, as we see with the producer price index. So you're going to continue to see a tremendous inflationary pressure. We probably have yet to see the peak, primarily because of the fiscal policy that the administration has focused on, with the, you know, massive expenditures, and they're attempting, the Democrats are attempting to push through another massive spending bill, kind of a Build Back Better too. And if they are, it looks like Joe Manchin is saying, no way, I'm not going to do it, which is going to, you know, really upset again a lot of the Democrats. But as they try to push through this more spending bills, that's absolutely damaging. And the other piece of it is the regulatory environment that the administration continues to push on the energy sector. the restrictions, the lack of support, the influence from ESG, environmental social governance investors pushing away from fossil fuels, and the government actually influencing those large investment companies to push ESG. And what that does is actually gives incredible power to many of these influential big, large funds like Fidelity and BlackRock. And yeah, that's just absolutely devastating the economy, because they're getting richer while the average middle-class American and low, and the people on the lower end of the economic spectrum are once again becoming poorer very rapidly.
What I find to be interesting is a lot of people are saying that at least we're going to have a soft landing, at least the Fed's actions in terming the recession is going to prevent a recession from coming around the corner. The Journal came out yesterday and said that's absolutely false. There is no way that that's going to happen. We are definitely going to go into a recession. And with everything that I know about economics, economic trends, et cetera, I have to agree with that, Jimmy. The American people are really suffering. When we go into a recession, it's going to be worse and worse and worse. The 2024, I should say, elections, I think, are going to reflect that also.
Yeah, I certainly hope they do, and we've got to ensure integrity in the election system to ensure that they do. Here's some of the real, you know, the Biden administration has been pushing the fastest growing economy and made these absolutely bogus statements, the best economy in history, you know. I mean, it's just ridiculous arguments.
Right.
We have not reached the employment level that we had prior to the COVID lockdowns in March of 2020. So we haven't even got back to where we were in 2020. So when they talk about a, you know, increase, look, this government, the Biden regime, actually was holding people out of work and firing people for not getting vaccinated up until just this last, you know, just a few months ago. And in fact, they're still holding some of these regulations and starting to push it. And you're hearing a lot about the midterm variant, in my view, the MTV, which is the Omicron 5 variant, as they're attempting to, again, influence election outcomes by controlling people through a lot of fear and these really, really bad policies that really destroyed our economy and have a tremendous impact. And we'll talk about later in the show the psychological impact. But the economic impact, we haven't recovered from it yet. So all the lies they're putting out there are absolutely false. The recession, my view, and I've actually been saying this for months on this show, that we probably are already in a recession that with these types of inflationary numbers and the lack, the actual purchasing power for Americans has dropped over 3%, negative 3% in incomes. Those are devastating numbers. Those are not equivalent to what happened back even in, I mean, worse than what happened in the 80s, in the late 70s and the early 80s. So, yeah, we're there, Al. We are in a very difficult position. And the problem is this administration doesn't believe it. They try to lie their way out of it, and they're not setting policies in place in order to come out of it.
Well, no, they're not. There's a lot of rhetoric going on. The rhetoric makes absolutely no sense. And I think that people truly feel, aside from people who have been very, very fortunate in the real estate market, the level of, I think, poverty in the United States, and what I want to say, I mean psychological poverty, the level of psychological poverty in the United States right now is growing and growing and growing. And I'm not even close to being surprised, Jimmy, that, pardon me, bad throat. I'm not even close to being surprised that we are in a situation right now where the Democrats even are saying we don't want Biden to run again. Stick around, we're going to be right back and talk a little bit about Biden in the Middle East. Right back.
You
your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Okay, welcome back. Well, we've got Joe Biden in the Middle East. As we're recording right now, he appears to be in Saudi Arabia, bending over and praying that these people will increase the level of energy production that's coming out of that country. What's going on, Jimmy?
Yeah, the sad thing is that as Biden is over there begging for the Saudis to increase oil production for the short term, he's actually influencing, as we've mentioned in the previous segment, you know, trying to stop fossil fuel production in the United States. And he's in a very interesting position here because the Democrats and Biden himself used the Khashoggi incident in 2018 to really attack the Trump administration's relationship with the Saudis,
right,
in order to show that, you know, supporting this terrorist, authoritarian leadership. And now he has completely ignored all that, going back and basically licking their feet in order to beg them to increase production to relieve them from the inflationary pressures that we're seeing from energy and fuel prices, while they're continuing to push a lockdown on energy and fuel prices and stopping production and transportation distribution of fuel, fossil fuels in the United States, making us more dependent on foreign oil and foreign gas. This is absolute ridiculousness. And the problem that he's facing, Joe Biden is facing, is the Saudis may not be able to increase much production if they care to at all to support this administration, because they don't trust them. Because Biden is actually, part of the visit over there is to convince both Israel and Saudi Arabia to be more supportive of a new Iranian nuclear deal. And the unfortunate reality is the Iranians, very close, and according to the International Agency for Energy Agency, Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, that they actually probably have at any time now enough weapons-grade material to produce a weapon, and they've been attempting to do it for a long period of time, which would change the entire dynamic in the region and potentially cause tremendous conflagration of warfare in the area. The Saudis are fighting the Iranians now in Yemen and around the world and in other places. They don't want this to happen. And so the Biden regime going over there attempting to do this just seems to me to be absolutely futile policy.
Well, let me ask your opinion on this, Jim. I'm under the impression that what's going on in the Middle East, primarily with Iran and some of the other countries, number one, during the Trump administration, President Trump got an awful lot of peace projects going at the time. A lot of countries decided that it wasn't worth risking a huge, huge war in the area, and they signed peace treaties. Most of those treaties today are kind of gone by the wayside, which I think is really too bad. Why did that happen under the liberal administration, Jim? It makes no sense, man.
I won't say the treaties, and I don't think it's a great statement to say that they've gone by the wayside. I think you're right, though, that they are not pursuing the policies that developed these peace deals
with
four different countries. Yeah, and I think so. The economic benefits and looking past the laser focus on the Palestinian issue allowed the Trump administration to expand peace negotiations with other areas, with UAE, with Bahrain, with Sudan. These were really important moments in history, very important moments in history. And what's happening now is the Biden regime was back in Israel in the last day and a half here, and reestablishing the relationships and the focus on a two-state solution on the Palestinians, which is really irrelevant for these other peace deals that happened during the Trump administration. The Trump administration was looking past it. The Biden regime is reverting back to the failed mistakes of the Obama administration, which caused so much turmoil in the region. And unfortunately, the gaffes and the lack of support, the lack of confidence and trust in America after the Afghanistan pullout failure, what's happening continually in Ukraine, and of course this kind of you know, back and forth. Biden has already made some really bad faux pas in Israel, right, and by crossing over into East Jerusalem, taking off the Israeli flag off the beast, the presidential limousine, those types of things. They're not going to convince the Israelis this is the right direction, no, in spite of their, you know, kind of kowtowing to this liberal, you know, coalition government in Israel. And the Palestinians don't really have the influence they once had. So again, they're focusing in the wrong area. They're focusing on reestablishing something that they tried to do and failed at in the previous administration. They're cutting back on Trump policies that actually got success in the region. And I think it's just, once again, it shows a lack of leadership and a lack of vision from the Biden team.
You know, what it shows to me is that it shows a huge increase in the amount of strength and the amount of influence of what I would call the progressives, the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortezes of the world. I can't believe that a savvy politician like Joe Biden was at one time would allow something like that to happen. With the typical liberals in power, they could have done, I think they could have probably done okay. But, you know, going on to some of these, some of the actions of increasing green energy, et cetera, America is not interested in that. And I'm amazed that Pelosi and Schumer didn't realize that. Pelosi and Schumer are the ones to blame. They're the ones who really allowed this thing to get out of hand, Jimmy.
Well, I think, again, I don't think that there's any competence left or any decision-making ability left in Joe Biden. I think he is being handled by, multiple staffs, multiple people in that organization, inside the White House that have vying opinions and beliefs. And I think what we're seeing here is a incoherent set of policies, our foreign policy, our domestic policy, our, you know, border policy, our economic policy. These are not congruent, and they're fighting against each other. And it's because people inside Washington giving him advice are failing to actually work together in efficient manners for the best interest of the United States. And they're doing it from their own ideological, philosophical beliefs, the esoteric intellectual view, which really is failing in the reality of the world. And that's unfortunate. That's what we're seeing.
Well, totally. And we're going to devote the second half of the show, unfortunately, not to the rest of the world. We're going to devote it to what's going on in America right now. We've got a huge, huge problem in America, as Jimmy and I have talked about on all of the daily editorials Monday through Friday of this past week. A huge problem. The psychological health of America right now is very minimal. We're going to be right back and we're going to talk about that. Stick around.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Time for the second hour of KER Politics. Going to talk a little bit about what's going on in the country in a macro sense, not economically certainly, but psychologically. We're going to start out with a headline, More Good News for Joe Biden. Just got the results for the approval ratings for President Biden in Washington State, which is a bastion of democracy for the Democrats, a bastion of power, I guess is the best way to put it. Biden's approval rating is under 50% in the state of Washington. It's 43%. That, to me, is absolutely amazing. Let's talk about that first, Jimmy.
Yeah, both, from what I understand, in the latest polling reported by, I think it was King News in Seattle.
Channel 5,
they show that Jay Inslee, the governor, has a 47% approval rating, but he's underwater. His disapproval rating is higher than his approval rating. And Joe Biden with a 43% approval rating when he won, I think, 60% to about 38% over Trump in the 2020 election. That's a huge flip, and it really shows a level of dissatisfaction from all the issues that we talked about, the lack of police issues, the homeless situation, the frustration with the environmental policies that are actually strangling people, and of course, inflation, and the corruption. You know, the level of corruption and incompetence is very high.
Yeah, it really is. Well, I'm finding that to be very surprising here in Washington, because as you know, in Semiahmoo, there's a whole lot of very, very serious Democrats in here. But anyway, quite apart from that, I want to go back to our second subject, and that is the level of dissatisfaction. I'm not going to use the word dissatisfaction, Jimmy. I'm going to use the word angst. And the reason I'm going to do that was because of a daily editorial that we did, and I believe it was last Thursday. There was somebody walking around one of my neighborhoods, and we live in the country, and this isn't exactly right next to us, but it's about 2-3 miles away. This neighborhood happens to be a gated community, and this fellow was walking around brandishing a knife, threatening to kill somebody, and a warning was put out on anybody's cell phone, you know, be careful of this guy. Just prior to that, we had a little bit of an altercation between two of the members of our own neighborhood here. I have to say that the main thing that concerns me about this is the level of angst that we have in a couple of neighborhoods that are actually pretty sophisticated, I should say populated by pretty sophisticated people. It's amazing to me that you have some dude walking around with a knife threatening to kill somebody, including the security guard, you know, at the gate, number one and number two. The altercation that we had in our neighborhood when one neighbor was talking to another neighbor and he said, "Don't ever call me again. I hate you and I hate all of the other neighbors and I don't want to talk to any of you." What's going on, Jimmy?
You know, there's a level of frustration that's out in society right now that we haven't felt in a long, long time. You know, very few times in my lifetime, you know, and I'm a little over 60, have I felt this, you know, type of tension. I remember back in the late 70s, of course, in the Carter era, the frustration, watching the violence. When I was younger, you know, in the 60s, my dad was a law enforcement officer in Sacramento County in California, and the violence in Oak Park riots, and of course, what you're seeing all across the TV, you saw a lot of angst there. What's different a little bit today is there's different factors, and a larger percentage of the population is divided. In those times, in those periods, you know, the extremists, the protests on the campuses and the left-wing arguments, that was confined to a pretty small but very vocal minority. Mm-hmm. What we've got now is a divide in the country that's split basically close to half and half because of manipulation by the media, because of government. The way I look at it, it's a lot of it's manipulation with media. A lot of it is the government response to what's happening with these lockdowns and the COVID policies that are really frustrating both businesses but individuals. And then the economic policies. And you're watching a disintegration of a hope in America of a better lifetime. And I think that weighs on people's minds very strongly. And of course, they want to protect their own interests, because naturally we all move towards that, to protect our own interests. Right. And the level of frustration and angst is increased. And I think one other area, Al, that that people need to consider. So if you've been told something in your life or for, you know, a long period of time that you believe is true, and you believe certain authority figures, say your doctor or your government officials, your politicians, and then those narratives begin to collapse, it's difficult to change your perception if your whole mind and body has been saying, okay, I mean, the abortion issue is another, you know, important consideration what's happening right now with the frustration. You think, you believe that things are a certain way, but when facts start coming to you that says, wow, maybe the COVID thing isn't that, it wasn't the crazy thing that it was going to destroy the world. Maybe the vaccine's not working because it's not working. People are still getting COVID after the vaccine, and people are still dying from it. In fact, more people apparently, according to many statistics in the UK, around the world, I know another study just came out, more people are dying with the vaccinations and boosters than people without. And when those facts begin to fall away, and all of a sudden your whole world is turned upside down, it's hard to accept that you were lying to yourself to believe this when other people were pushing back. Yeah. And I think that's where a lot of the anger is coming from.
Well, you know, we have situations socially around here that have been crazy for about 2 years. And I have to tell you, I'm pretty certain that the reason things have gotten so botched up psychologically for Americans, I really think it's the concept of them not being able to be in control. And that's what happens when you have these lockdowns, Jimmy. What I find to be interesting is Fauci is still not accepted as being wrong, in spite of all the books that have been written by fellow medical guys and gals. It's just amazing to me. This is something that's going to go down in history, Jim, as just simply totally, totally, totally unexplained.
Well, I think it's going to be able to be explained. I think it's going to be a fusion of political power actions, of financial interests, of corruption, and of people that were just intimidated by the threats of government agencies and the Justice Department and organizations like the CDC and the FDA. There's a fantastic article out right now, and it's basically stating that the CDC and the FDA are losing a large number of scientists, and they're quitting, and employees, because they can't believe the lack of science and truth and the amount of politics that are actually driving the decision making. And they use the very specific examples of the lack of information and the lack of studies on approving childhood vaccinations down to infants for COVID. And the studies have, there's no scientific proof that there's any effectiveness, but there is a high risk of impact from it. And now we're seeing more and more information. So again, it's one of those areas where things are collapsing and people are being very frustrated by them.
And again, Jim, we've got to take a real quick commercial break. You guys stick around 30 seconds to 1 minute and we're back. Welcome back. Time to wrap up KER Politics. You know, we're talking about the level of angst in America that I find it to be really interesting. I have to tell you, I know we've been talking about COVID. We've been talking about, the child immunizations, et cetera, et cetera. I quite frankly think the situation is really in the hands of the Democrats. I think they have made a huge mistake. I noticed that Governor Jay Inslee of Washington is not the fair-haired boy that he was considered to be even as short a period of time ago as a week. The anger that's being displayed by Democrats is rubbing off on society. When you look at expression on Nancy Pelosi's face when she's talking about the opposition, it's not good, clean competition. It's absolute hatred. It's Chuck Schumer's the same way. Chuck Schumer comes across as being somebody who wants you to believe that he knows everything and he's a tough guy. He's a New York brawler, etc., etc. The attitude uncivil of the Democrats right now, I think, is part of the reason that people are very, very very angry. I mean, look at some of the hearings, for God's sakes, you know. And even some of the Republicans, I'm sorry, I have to say, fall into that category. Look at the turnaround of the good guy from Kentucky, i.e. Mitch McConnell, turned into a bit of a schmuck, don't you think?
I think a lot of the senior Republicans are very afraid to lose their power. I think they're very afraid of what's happening right now with in America. You can call it Trumpism, or you can call it Save America. You can call it just pushback. And I think that is a threat to people that think they know how things work and they can control it. And that's, you know, with conservatives and, you know, Democrats and Republicans, is beginning to weigh on people's mind. I think the Trump, the entire Trump, and I like to remind people of this, the entire Trump phenomenon from 2015 when he announced his run for the presidency, it wasn't about, you know, Donald Trump. People were frustrated with Washington. They were fed up with the Obama administration and what they had done for the previous years, and the Bush administration and the danger and the wars and the things that continued on for so long. They were fed up with a corrupt system and the media. They were fed up with a lot. And that they made their statement by electing Donald Trump against Hillary Clinton, against the institution and the elite in 2016. The fight back was vicious from the powerful. They used every method they possibly could. They used the media continually to alienate him and anybody that supported him. They used law enforcement. They undermined the presidency all the way, you know, to the senior members of the Department of Justice, undermined the legitimacy of the president while they went through these incredible investigations. Congress did it. Basically, it was a no-holds-barred attack because they were afraid they were losing control, right. And it included senior Republicans. Burr from North Carolina, Senator Burr on the Health Intelligence Oversight Committee, Senate Intelligence Committee. He worked with Warner from Virginia, Democrat from Virginia, in order to ensure the investigations went forward on the Trump administration. Mitch McConnell was continually undermining the Trump, backstabbing the Trump administration from behind, but then pretending out to be forward and supportive of it because he was gaining some things out of it. What we see is a complete frustration with the system. And, you know, as hard as the intellectuals and the elitists and the people that are right now think they can control the population, they can't do it. People are frustrated and they're feeling it.
Well, let me ask you this. How detrimental do you think, in a very real sense, how detrimental is this going to be to the country? Are we looking at a major stab at the country, major, something that could really, I don't want to say turn us into a third world power, but something where we actually meaningfully slip in terms of being a world power?
I think we're right on the precipice.
Yeah.
I think the mistakes with the Biden administration right now, I mean, demographically, we are not the most populous place on the planet. You know, China and India, both rising economies, both very large, 1.3 billion people. India will surpass China fairly soon demographically because of the one child policy that China set in the past. But they have, you know, completely different views of the world. They don't have a long-term historical perspective of the same basic freedoms and the policies that we have. The Europeans have lost a tremendous amount of influence and power because they're dependent upon energy from Russia, for instance, and they're dependent upon Chinese imports and to keep their manufacturing, to keep their population going. So it's a very difficult situation for the United States right now as we lose population, or we gain it from illegal movement, but we don't have a growing population, and our economic power is waning. Our military power is spread all over the world and waning with really incredibly bad decision-making at the senior Pentagon leadership right now, as we saw in Afghanistan, as we see with woke policies, we see with these mandatory vaccinations against people that don't need it because of their ages and their health. Mm-hmm. And they're threatening 60,000 Guard members around the country. That's almost 10%. It's 8% of the overall U.S. National Guard force. And they're only reaching 40% of their recruitment goals right now. They're in a tremendous difficult problem, and they don't accept why. These things will have a long-term impact on American power, and it is undermining the legitimacy of the nation. It's undermining the stability of the world, and you're going to face authoritarian pressures all over the place in order to stop, in order to counter our growth and our capability to come back. It's going to be a tough haul to get back to credibility.
Well, given the fact that you have a what I would call more than slightly formidable foe in China, the Chinese are much sharper than we are, quite frankly. They don't, you know, they don't put up
They've
with
got it. A vision.
They've got a vision, and they don't put up with idiots like, you know, like Schumer and Pelosi and the rest of it. Nancy Pelosi would be in jail in China, for God's sakes, and I don't know that Chuck Schumer would be, because I don't follow him that closely, but with some of the stuff that Pelosi does, they just throw her in jail, and they would no compunction whatsoever.
Well, I always laugh at the pundits that are so, you know, so destructive towards, say, the Trump policy or towards the opposition, you know, and in China, you do that, and it is an offense that will put you in prison.
Right.
If you even question it. And I think there's a fantastic set of videos. I mean, they're very scary videos talking about the policies right now of a daily QR code to keep your status green so you can actually move, travel, or buy things in China without COVID testing. And they have masses of people lined up to get COVID testing every single day.
Yeah.
Total control. They set controls for their entire 1.3 billion people in the population as best they can. I mean, it's basically major urban areas. But that's the type of control system that they will have if we continue down this road. And the first people that will be gone will be the ones that make the count, the Rachel Maddows, the people that are arguing to destroy our system, the 1619 Project woman, Nancy Pelosi. These people would be gone in a heartbeat. They need to protect this nation. They need to stand up for it and quit lying about saying they're doing it when, in fact, they're undermining it
right
every single day.
Right. Agree 1,000%. It's really a shame, but, you know, we have a bit of psychological warfare going on in our neighborhood right now, and it's really interesting. The amount of angst, et cetera, that's resulting from all of this is absolutely incredible. People can look you in the eye and tell you an absolute bald-faced lie, and if you don't believe it, they don't care. My daughter didn't go to her stepmother's funeral because of she had political issues with Kathy. That's just bullshit. And life in general is getting to be too complicated, in my opinion. So there you have it. KER politics, a lot of anger, a lot of, I would even use the word vitriol. Jim, always a pleasure. You're a prince. Thank you.
You bet, Al. We've got to get back to some normalcy.
We got to try.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.